This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran holds a funeral for security forces killed during a terrorist attack in the southeastern city of Zahedan. And one of the world's deadliest football disasters happened in Indonesia, where rioting and stampede at a stadium caused nearly 175 deaths. In the United States, the death toll from Hurricane Ian has risen to at least 44. Rescuers are still searching for survivors in Florida. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. A funeral procession has been held for Iranian security forces killed during a terrorist attack in the southeastern Sistan and Baluchistan province. Senior local and military officials have attended the ceremony in Zahedan. The participants demanded that the perpetrators be brought to justice. On Friday, members of a separatist group staged an armed attack on a police station and vandalized public property. They opened fire on security forces as well as worshippers who were in the area following the Friday prayers. According to officials, 19 people were killed and 20 got injured during the violence. Security forces moved in quickly to repel the attack. They killed a number of the assailants. Several security forces, including Chief Commander of the IRGC's local intelligence, Ali Mousavi, lost their lives in the armed confrontation. Academic and political analyst Alexander Azadegan says that he believes the Saudi government was behind the recent deadly terrorist attack in southeastern Iran.
It's very important for Iranian officials at the highest level to visit Sistan and Baluchistan province to send a solid symbolic message to Saudi Arabia. You ask me who's behind this, and it's Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the second state sponsor of terror around the world. They support terrorist groups, whether it's ISIS, ISIS-K, or Al-Qaeda, or all these other groups. There's one in Algeria that doesn't, in Nigeria that doesn't come to my mind, Boko Haram. And this is what they're doing right now. They are taking advantage of the anti-hijab media momentum when Iran itself has stretched itself thin in different fronts. And let's not forget, there are several fronts with this. Obviously, the attack, Sistan, Baluchistan, and specifically Zahedan, Saudi Arabia not only supports this financially, but Saudi Arabia funds an anti-Iran propaganda channel out of London. Obviously, I'm not going to call the, you know, mention their name. Let's just call them the voice of Saudi Arabia, because that's what they do.
The chief commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has had some tough words for foreigners plotting against Iran while addressing the root causes of the recent unrest in Iran in a speech.
We are telling our enemies, the US, Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that through their destructive media outlets, they are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you, we will crush you, you will not find any way into this territory. A great Iran will never ever allow one of you into its territory. Our young people are well aware, have awareness. Even these few people who have been deceived by you, by your promises and by your nonsense words.
Major General Hossein Salami said that the United States has become weak and helpless, and that's why the enemies have launched a political and media campaign to make up for it. He said they don't want to allow the existence of a powerful, influential, and sovereign country ruled by Islam. General Salami, however, noted that Iranians know how to defeat their enemies. He vowed revenge against enemy actions, whether it be the downing of a drone or attacking a police station. The death toll from the stampede and riot in an Asian football stadium has risen to 174 among the victims, a five-year-old child. Scores of others have also been injured in the incident in the Malang region. The tragedy unfolded when supporters of the losing side rushed to the pitch in anger. Security forces fired tear gas to push the rioters back, but that triggered panic and a deadly stampede as fans tried to escape. The government of President Joko Widodo has called the incident a tragedy and apologized to the public. Widodo has also ordered a security review. This is the deadliest stadium tragedy since the 1964 riot and crash in Peru that killed nearly 330 people. Now to the United States, where the confirmed death toll from Hurricane Ian has risen to at least 44. Authorities saying the final death toll could be much higher as reports of additional fatalities are still emerging from different counties in Florida. The devastating storm has left behind a trail of destruction in Florida, with rescuers still searching for survivors in submerged neighborhoods and along the state's southwest coast. Homes, restaurants, and businesses were ripped apart when Ian roared ashore as a powerful Category 4 hurricane on Wednesday. U.S. media has tallied more than 70 deaths related to the storm, directly or indirectly. President Biden will head to Puerto Rico and Florida this week to get a first-hand look at the damage caused by back-to-back hurricanes. The new inflation data shows the United States and the Eurozone are mired in record inflation, but economic pessimism may only be just the beginning following the destruction of Nord Stream pipelines of Russian gas to Europe. Rami Mazzaro reports from Chicago.
New data revealed that inflation hit a record 10% in the Eurozone and topped 6% in the United States as Western sanctions against Russia continue to massively backfire. The data is even worse than it appears because it covers the month of August, when oil prices had dropped. This week's apparent sabotage of the Russian-German Nord Stream gas pipelines is a shocking escalation of the unrest in Ukraine and will have enormous consequences. Energy prices appear set to soar for a prolonged period. Europe's energy insecurity is now off the charts. Dreaded stagflation now seems like the West's certain economic future, and global bond markets are undergoing their worst drawdown ever. Polls ranging from the average person to the wealthy investor all reveal that economic pessimism has reached levels not seen since 2008, when the United States sparked the great financial crisis.
That my parents, who have saved for retirement, are actually making decisions about what groceries they might put back on the shelf and what ones they're going to buy in a given month. It's kind of sad. These may be small things, but they all add up. They're going to have an issue with supply chain shortages, which can then have a further impact on inflation. And then just heading into the winter months, that I anticipate things are probably going to get worse.
Western central banks have shifted from unprecedented zero interest rate policies to rates not seen in decades. But even if that does tame inflation, it will likely take months, if not years. For those on fixed incomes, the working poor class, and much of the middle class, serious economic damage has already been done.
A lot of my friends are just keeping their jobs they've had ever since we were 18, even 16, because it's the only way we can get some money in our pockets. We're still living on the mama's roof, mama's food, because, well, not only do we have to pay rents that are excessive, we have to go to grocery store. Well, milk is now like $6 for, you know, what we used to pay $3, $4.
Many say solutions do exist, such as price caps, anti-monopoly legislation, caps on corporate profits, and wage increases. However, in the United States, such ideas appear politically impossible, and they are deeply opposed across the Eurozone as well. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
The Palestinian Foreign Ministry is calling for the international protection of Palestinian people in the wake of the death of yet another teenager at the hands of Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. In a statement, the ministry said that the killing of Fayez Khaled Amdurm shows that Israel is seeking to mount tensions in the West Bank by continuing its crimes such as field executions and extrajudicial killings of Palestinians. The foreign ministry added Israel is fully responsible for the heinous killing of the teenagers, stressing it will work with all international bodies to hold the regime accountable for such crimes. 18-year-old Faiz was shot while driving a motorbike in the town of Al-Azari on Saturday. Israel has intensified deadly crackdown on the West Bank recently, killing some 100 Palestinians in the West Bank this year alone. Meantime, thousands of people have rallied in the Gaza Strip to support the Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds. The event was organized by the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. The rally showed the Palestinian people's support for all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation. Our Gaza correspondent has a report.
Palestinians held a mass rally in the blockaded Gaza Strip to support Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds in the face of growing Israeli aggressions against the Holy City. People shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries on Israel's crimes in Al-Quds. Tensions have been on the rise in recent weeks as extremist Israeli settlers and Israeli forces desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We're sending a clear message to the whole world that the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people are in a constant battle against the Israeli enemy and will not remain silent over aggressions against Al-Aqsa.
People from all walks of life gathered to express their support for resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks.
People in Gaza are attending this rally to affirm our support and full backing for the Palestinian resistance. We believe that armed resistance is key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine.
Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it as the capital of their future state.
We are here to support Al-Aqsa Mosque because it's part of our faith, and we are willing to sacrifice our lives in order to protect it. Gaza will always defend Al-Quds, and we call on all Arabs and Muslims to protect Al-Quds.
Occupied by Israeli regime forces in 1967, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice.
Palestinians say they will use all forms of resistance to protect Al-Aqsa Mosque and the holy city of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
All right, let's move on with the rest of this broadcast. Just in a few hours' time, Brazilians will be heading for polls in the most polarized presidential election in decades. Voting is compulsory for more than 156 million Brazilians eligible. Far-right incumbent Jair Bolsonaro is being challenged by left-wing ex-president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Campaigning has been bitter, the two candidates exchanging insults. The latest opinion polls have given Lula a healthy lead with a chance of securing an outright victory in the first round. Bolsonaro has attacked the voting system and threatened to contest his defeat. Lula was not able to run in the last election because he was in jail after being convicted on corruption charges. The Supreme Court later annulled his conviction. Russian President Vladimir Putin has formalized the rejoining process of the regions which are now part of Russian territory. He has promised to protect them as Russia's own. The West, however, is condemning what it calls an illegal annexation by Russia, and Ukraine has vowed to take back the territory. And that may spell another chapter to this conflict.
Подошел. К концу референдума о вступлении Донецкой Народной Республики в состав Российской Федерации.
The wait was finally over. The four regions of Ukraine are not Ukrainian territory any longer, but Russian territory, after referendums were held.
Of course, there were soldiers, but it was not because of forcing the people, but it was to protect us, and not for the people to force them to vote.
It's perfectly understandable, and on the democratic point of view, I don't see anything to say against this referendum.
The residents overwhelmingly voted to join Russia. This was the fight of their lives, said the leader of Donetsk. 3,000 days of fighting, thousands killed due to Ukraine's shelling. Now lives will be saved. The Russian President Vladimir Putin couldn't be happier. In an address that deserved the attention that it was given, the Russian president formalized the new Russian regions. The U.S., the U.K., and the West in general already spoke out against these referendums, which they called a sham.
Russia and the sham referenda and annexations that seem to be proceeding in Ukraine. One, we've been very clear that we are prepared and we will impose additional severe and swift costs on Russia for proceeding with the annexations.
The UK Prime Minister Liz Truss was visibly angry at Russia's formalization. Putin cannot be allowed to alter international borders using brute force. We will ensure that he loses this illegal war. For Russia, this was a big moment. First, it was successful in building a wall that almost entirely blocked NATO's eastward expansion. This would almost make Ukraine a landlocked country, posing another major challenge for Ukraine and the U.S.
The rejoining of these regions is considered to be as a big win for the Russian president. Vladimir Putin has managed to accomplish what he has set out to do, something which initially started in 2014 and has borne fruit now. He has, in essence, taken back one-fifth of Ukrainian territory. At the same time, Putin has made Ukraine almost landlocked, which would militarily work to Russia's advantage. This is while Ukraine, NATO, the U.S., and its European allies just watched all that unfold. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 2nd, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our great listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. So, here, I truly appreciate those of our great listeners around the world who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh, Tomas Kotas from Poland, and David Mabi from Finland. David, Mahfuzur Rahman, and Tomas, We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and the program Listeners Special. And of course, we've received many emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read these great emails. From Bangladesh, we've received an email from Muhammad Abdullah. From Spain, we've received an email from Ewald Glatsching, if I'm right in pronouncing your name, Ewald. And Heike Pranen from Finland has sent us an email. Najmuddin, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us an email. And the last but not the least is an email from Japan, from Toshiya Nishimura. Thank you very much for being with us. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and Muhammad Abdullah from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Let's see what Muhammad says. Take my cordial love and thanks. I am a Bangladeshi radio listener monitor. For the past 38 years, I have listened to international radio broadcast of different radio stations of the world. I'm very interested to monitor your station. Please send your recent or current frequency schedule with necessary reception report. And if possible, please send some other information about your station. Thank you. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And of course, IRIB English Radio to you, Muhammad Abdullah from Bangladesh. And please accept our warm gratitudes to you for sending us this email. So you've been listeners or monitor for international radio stations for 38 years, and that's a long time. This time it's our turn, IRIB English Radio. So we hope that this mutual relationship continues between IRIB English Radio and you. So for the time being, Muhammad Abdullah from Bangladesh, please accept our electronic QSL card as a verification to your email. And for in order to know the information about our radio station, you can refer to our website. There you can find the frequency schedule, and the address is www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Muhammad Abdullah from Bangladesh. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from Spain, we've received an email from Ewald Glatsching. Sorry if I mispronounced your name because I don't know Spanish, but Ewald says, "Dear sir or madam, I would like to start this message by sending you greetings from Spain. As introduction, let me say that I am an Austrian citizen and that, after working in the World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva, I have chosen to spend my retirement in the south of Spain, where I have been living now for some 3 years. The reason for me writing to you is that I was able to listen to your IRIB here in southern Spain, and I thought that that might be interesting news to you. I am enclosing an audio and hope you have a moment to listen it. Once again, let me express my pleasure because of having been able to receive the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting here in Spain. And I kindly would ask you to let me know if my report is correct and send me a verification reception, that is QSL confirmation. Thank you very much for your attention and looking forward to your reply. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and IRIB English Radio Station. Please accept our appreciations to you for sending us such detailed email to us, Ewald from Spain. Although you are an Austrian citizen, thank you for that. And you have a really nice job working in the World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva, and that's great. Thank you for sending us this email, Wald. We are glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region, southern Spain. It's also a pleasure to have you with us. So let us, this mutual bond and relationship between IRIB English Radio and you continue. So let us know your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Wild. Thank you again. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card or EQSL card as a verification. Welcome back. From India, we've received an email from Najmuddin, one of our old and regular listeners. Najmuddin says, "Dear staff, Assalamu alaikum. Once again, I am glad to send you yet another reception report of your station. I heard a piece of Islamic music with my favorite program, Listeners Special, in which I heard listeners' letters, emails, and message, and of course, enjoyed it very much. Kindly send me the list of new programs and frequency schedule with some used postage stamps." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Najmuddin from India, and please accept our warm gratitudes and appreciations to you for sending us this email. It's a pleasure to have you with us as a regular listener of Listeners Special and, of course, IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best, Najmuddin from India. For your information, as you know, in the time of pandemic, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio to our listeners is temporarily halted because of the pandemic. So, in order to find the frequency schedule, you can refer to our website, as you know, with the address of www.parstoday.com/en. Yes, you can. There you can find our frequency schedule and other information. Najmuddin from India, thank you again for sending us this email. Write to us soon. We wish you all the best. And from Finland, we've received an email from Heikki Pranainen. Heikki Pranainen from Finland says, "I had the pleasure of listening to you broadcast radio on medium wave. The reception was not so good. Not very good signal strength and a moderate interference from unidentified station. I enclose with this reception report a link, including MP3 file recorded during the listening. I am 53 years old and working as a testing engineer of electric equipment here in Finland. During autumn 2020, I have started DXing after 10 years. If you're interested, you can verify this reception report to reply this email." First of all, salam to you, Heikki Pranainen from Finland, and thank you very much for sending us this email. Yes, we've received your MP3 file and we listened to it. Thank you for that. And as for the trouble you had regarding the signal strength and the interference, as you said, the reception was not so good and the signal strength was not very good. We're so sorry for that. And our colleagues, the engineers and the technicians would fix that problem. If the problem is on our behalf, we will fix it very soon. Don't worry about it. But for the time being, please accept our EQSL card as confirmation. Heikki Pranainen from Finland, thank you very much for sending us this email. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. We wish you all the best. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Yes, you just received a piece of Iranian traditional music, and I like it very much. Toshio Nishimura from Japan has sent us an email. Toshio Nishimura from Japan says, "Dear staff, It is with great pleasure that I report reception of your broadcasting. I would like to hear more broadcasts about different aspects of your country of Iran. Thank you for your consideration. If the details in my report are found to be correct, I would appreciate very much to receive your verification card or your letter. Such a document would also serve as a nice remembrance of contact with your station. I believe that this report will be useful to your technical department. Thank you. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Toshio Nishimura from Japan. And please accept our warm appreciations to you for sending us such detailed email. Thank you for letting us know your favorite programs. As you said, you like different aspects of Iran, broadcasting more programs about the different aspects of our country, Iran. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and, of course, to this program. Listeners, a special Toshio Nishimura from Japan. Thank you for this email. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification. We wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So before saying goodbye to you and before ending this program, Listeners Special, I would like to say thank you to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including David Mabi from Finland, Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh, Thomas Kotas from Poland, Toshio Nishimura from Japan, Heike Pranen from Finland, Najmuddin from India, Ewald Glanching from Spain, and Muhammad Abdullah from Bangladesh. Thank you again. We had a very nice time. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The UK Prime Minister has not been in office for more than a month, yet she has sent the UK economy in a tailspin. First, her announcement of a new tax plan, but it was blasted to benefit the rich more than the poor. And it was then reported that the UK markets lost £500 billion since Liz Truss took over. And then the British pound sunk once again against the dollar as the UK dived deeper into a recession. What is going on with the UK's economy? And is it all the fault of the new UK Prime Minister? That is what we'll be asking our guests in this edition of the program. Our guests joining us for this program are journalist and commentator James Tweedy, who joins us from Plymouth. Also joining us is political and economic analyst Shabir Rizvi, who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. James Tweedy, I have this semi-technical question to maybe ask you, but I figured I'd just come out with a really, really simple question. What is going on with the UK's economy under Truss?
Thanks for having me. There's a problem with the economy, and it predates Liz Truss becoming Prime Minister, and that's the problem, as they call it, the cost of living crisis, which in other words is inflation. Inflation is running at about 10% now, and may rise still, and what that's been caused by the rising prices of natural gas and oil, which is driven by the sanctions on Russia over the its military operation in Ukraine. So, Truss bears responsibility for that because she was Foreign Secretary at the time that the time of the operation started, and she was always one of the leading voices for support for Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. And the Conservative Party everyone knew that that's what she stood for when she was running for leadership of the Conservative Party and to become the new Prime Minister. Whereas her main opponent, Rishi Sunak, it was less certain, but there was people who hoped that he would take a more pragmatic view and ease off on the sanctions. But it's all become kind of irrelevant now because somebody, possibly across the Atlantic, has sabotaged the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines that carry gas from Russia to Germany and other places in Northern Europe.
Okay.
So we're very deep in the crisis now, and it's hard to see how we're going to get out.
Sure. And quickly, if you were to give a percentage fault to Truss for the state of the UK economy now, how much of a percentage would you attribute to her?
Okay. I mean, the question is whether the budget, the mini budget on Friday, caused this. Well, you have the same, the euro currency suffered the same slump in value against the dollar, as did the yen, the Japanese yen, the Australian dollar, and the Canadian dollar. And the difference is that the USA has energy security and Europe doesn't, you see. So I don't think it's to do with that. There's a problem with mortgage lenders have started changing all the mortgage products, the mortgages that they offer. They've withdrawn lots of them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's because they offered a lot of fixed rate mortgages, and they don't want to do that anymore because inflation is so high, and this predates the budget, that the Bank of England is going to keep putting up interest rates. So, of course, everybody is going to want to have their mortgage rate fixed for 2 or 3 or 5 years, like they used to be able to. But the mortgage companies, you know, they're like casinos. You know, the house always wins, right? You know, they set up so the house always wins. Well, they don't want to, lose out on that. They're going to pull those products.
Sure.
They pulled a lot of one where you pay a fee, like, say, £1,000 in advance, and you get a slightly lower interest rate. So you're paying your interest up front. But,
okay.
You know, that's based on a certain interest rate, and if the interest rate is going to go up, then, you know, the bank or the mortgage lender loses out. So I don't think it's to do with that budget. You know, the big thing is that the government is spending, it's going to borrow about $60 billion, they say, to pay for, to keep people's household bills down.
Okay.
In other words, to subsidize people's gas and electricity bills. So that's increasing government borrowing. And then there was a run on government debt bonds, you know.
Very well.
Like government bonds.
Sure. Let's bring in Shabir Rizvi in here to get a little bit clearer, Shabir Rizvi, about, or maybe you can tell us why this proposed tax cuts, which... First of all, depending on what publication you're reading, but it seems to be unanimous that it's going to benefit the rich more than the poor, why it has caused this domino effect in different sectors, not different sectors, in different factors that have pulled the UK economy into doldrums, as it's been reported. Perhaps you can explain it to us in layman's terms, of course.
Hello, good evening, Kaveh. It's really interesting times to be commenting as to what's happening to the UK economy. My day job is as a financial advisor, advising clients how to borrow money, how to invest their income, and so on. And it has been really quite a shocking week. It really comes after Mrs. Truss defended her vision for the economy, which has spooked markets and shocked most economists, mainstream economists. So, you know, everyone is really quite intrigued as to the policies that have been implemented. And then, of course, this week saw, yes, there are factors that other currencies have also fallen against the dollar. But this week, the pound touched the lowest value ever against the dollar. You know, dollar which was invested 250 years ago. And the Bank of England are so alarmed that they poured billions into the market. Why they did that? Because a lot of money, pension funds are invested in it, and they didn't want the pension funds to collapse. Interest on government borrowing goes from almost 0% to 5% in weeks. The IMF is also spooked. The Chancellor dare not publish the report of the independent experts. It's expected to be published sometime in October now, and he was sort of pushing it forward for end of November. And what we are told, the mantra we are told, is that don't worry, say both Truss and Kutang, an age of prosperity is just down the road. We've been living for the last 12 years in the age of austerity, where the rich have been getting richer and the poor have been getting poorer. And really, you know, it's really extraordinary. You know, for the last 40 years, the neoliberal economist mantra has been to say that trickle-down economics, meaning that make the rich richer, therefore some money will trickle down to the poor. This is what I like to sort of dub as voodoo-nomics, not Reaganomics, not Thatcher-nomics, not Trussonomics. It's pure voodoo-nomics. There is no fundamental basis that by reducing 5% tax on the wealthiest would sort of somehow make the poorer better off. It's absolutely sort of outrageous. It has no basis in conventional economic thinking. It's an economy based on ideology.
Well, that's
the Tory party, as I said, has made rich richer in the last 12 years, and they want to continue to do so for the next 2.5 years, 2 years that they're in power.
Well, James Sweeney, that's pretty much What our guest there, Shabir Rizvi, has said is what many economists agree, and that is that trickle-down economics doesn't work. Of course, it depends on who you're talking to. At the same time, we know that Liz Truss has said, this is not going to make me a popular prime minister, but I'm going to go with it anyways, and she has actually embarked on this and is not going to shy away from it. If she knows that it's not going to work, based on what it has, what economists have said, or other analysts have said, she's very steadfast in going through with it. What do you think the reason for that is, knowing that many have said trickle-down economics doesn't work?
Well, conventional economics, as taught in the West, is voodoo, that's for sure. But it's very strange to see the same people who said that trickle-down economics really does work, laissez-faire economics is great, for decades, and now saying it doesn't, the same people. The Tories have argued, and they can back this up, that cutting corporation tax actually increases tax revenue because you get more investment. Now, whether that's going to keep working, because it has in the past, but whether that's going to keep working in the current crisis, which is not, which is caused by an external factor, then I don't know. You see, you can't tell.
There might be an external factor. We're going to get into that, and I'm going to ask both of you whether that's the case.
I'm going to say, look, in Marxist economics, you need a capitalist to employ people. That's what creates jobs. You need capitalists, bigger capitalists, more capitalists. So yeah, it kind of works, but. What's going on is that, again, all the economists said the free market was sacred, and now we have this immense distortion of the market, of the free market, by putting embargoes and sanctions on Russian oil imports, and now blowing up the pipelines, the oil and gas imports, and now blowing up the gas pipelines. That has, and of course, that distortion has created an economic crisis, because the price of gas has gone up like tenfold in 2 years. So, there's all sorts of things going on here. But, what's going to happen? She's going to be unpopular, because a lot of the things that were in that budget would be popular with the people who vote Conservative. They're reducing taxes, including on the basic rate of tax for people that most people pay, right? They increased the threshold where you pay stamp duty, which is a tax on buying a house. Many more people will be exempt from that, because the threshold is now $500,000. And all these things, that was all sort of bread and butter stuff. But now what you're going to have, apparently there's a fear that the house price, the house market, the prices of houses will crash. So people who own house, they don't own them, they're paying mortgages, but people with property, the value of their property will fall, and they will be unhappy about
But
the thing is that the house market here is ridiculously overheated, to the extent everything is overpriced, people can't afford to buy.
Okay.
It needs to come down, and half of the properties on the market you see now, they're being sold at auction, which means that the only people who can buy them are big-time landlords who've got that much money in the bank to pay as soon as the auction, when the auction is
over. Let's move to that external factor that I'd like to ask Shabir Rizvi here, that maybe a reason, and a very good reason for Liz Truss to Shabir Rizvi to have introduced this tax cut plan. When she was running to become the prime minister, she during one of the sessions that she was presenting herself to the Friends of Israel, obviously displaying how much she supports Israel in so many ways, but said that the trade deal with Israel needs to be revamped. And she was very quick, when she came into office, to go ahead with that and finalize that, at the same time making the announcement that she's going to have UK's embassy possibly move from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. Now, it's very interesting that would be at the top of her list, the trade treaty to be revamped. Do you think that she's made promises to Israel, as an example, that you're going to get tax cuts, come and invest in the UK, and let's revamp the treaty that we had before? So she has to follow through with these tax cuts for the corporations, for example?
Well, look, the Israel angle is interesting, but I think it's very clear, if you look at it, wherever Israel is participating in economic activity, they really don't invest that much. They want more money to come into Israel for investment, whether it's technology from the Silicon Valley in the USA, or whether it's Indian investment into armament and biotechnology and other areas. So I don't know what benefit that would derive to the UK. But at a broader level, the mantra that is being sort of fed to the public here in UK, as you know very well, is that it's due to Putin that the oil prices has gone up. It's due to Putin that we have high inflation. Food security is being sort of put on the special operation in Ukraine. So everything that is happening to the British economy, the Tory government does not want to take and be honest, saying that they have inflicted austerity for the last 12 years on the British public. And this is an aspect of that austerity, so that the poorer become poorer, and is being sold to the public that, you know, tax is being reduced and so on. You know, 1% reduction in what is called national insurance tax here on, say, someone average salary earning here, 25, 30, 40,000 pounds. That's only £400 per year, that 1%. While the top 1%, 700,000 people in UK who would benefit by the 5% reduction in income tax, if someone is £100,000 a year, that's £50,000 extra in their pocket. So again, as I said earlier, the whole concept that if you make rich even richer by way of other instruments, whether it's the reduction in personal taxation, corporation taxation, and other aspects, will make the wider society cheaper. But if I may just continue for 1 minute, the policy that's being portrayed by Truss and her team and Mr. Kwasi Kwarteng is to make Britain less regulated. But dare I say that for the last 40 years, probably Britain is the most deregulated country in Europe at this moment. I don't know how far deregulation will go. Does it mean that a serfdom would come back into the UK like it was in Victorian times? Is that kind of a unregulated market that the Tories want to have in the UK? Right. And, you know, ideas are being touted that they want London to be the Singapore on the Thames, unregulated, for the wealthy and the rich, and absolutely regulated for the poor and the disenfranchised.
Sure. Well, I'm not too sure if that's going to work for the UK there, James Tweedy, when you have even the International Monetary Fund coming out. And this was surprising when the IMF comes out and makes a statement saying that what the fiscal measures Britain is adopting is actually going to increase inequality, urging UK authorities to reconsider providing more targeted support instead to affected families and businesses. Now, why would the IMF making that statement? Wasn't there inequality in the UK before anyways?
The IMF is responsible for, the continuation of colonial and post-colonial inequalities in the world, so they should know about inequality. It's actually baffling why they're saying that, why the White House is saying that, why the White House is even talking about it. Like it's their business, I've never heard the U.S. government interfering in Britain's economic affairs before. I think, like I say, it all comes back to inflation and the sanctions on Russia. That's not going to change. And yesterday, the shadow defense minister, Labour Party MP called Healey, said that the government will change. He's very sure of that. I'm not so sure. But and the Labour Party will be in power. But the policy towards Ukraine will not change. And he said that anyone who says stop the war is playing into Vladimir Putin's hands. So he's just as militant against Russia and for this war in the Ukraine as Liz Truss is. And so is the Labour Party, you see. So nothing is going to change. In fact, none of the parties in Parliament are proposing a different policy. So the crisis is going to continue. We have this, both the main parties are talking about sort of moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic in order to try and deal with the problem of gas and therefore electricity prices, oil and therefore electricity prices and every other kind of price going through the roof. The conservative way is going to be to borrow money to give to people to pay their bills, but those people will have to pay that money in the end, in the future, through taxation as that debt is paid off, probably after the next election. The Labour policy is to put a windfall tax, as they call it, on companies like BP, British Petroleum, that produce the actual gas and oil, and are making much bigger profits because of the global market price being very high now. But then they'll pay that money straight back to those companies as a subsidy for people's bills, you see. So those companies will make the same profit twice, and they'll continue to make that profit.
We got 30 seconds left, so I'm going to jump in. I'm sorry, and ask Shabir Rizvi the question. Shabir Rizvi, I was trying to look at the ways, different ways that the UK is spending money. £500 billion, I believe, is what's going to go for the energy issue. You were looking at another £500 million for the Ukraine war. These are just recent acts. And there was another $500 million. I don't know why this $500 is a figure that is repeated, where the UK has promised in another area, which I'm not coming up with that figure right now. But these are big chunks of money. Where is this money coming from that Liz Truss believes that it can just invest in different areas or to allocate in different areas when the economy is doing as bad as it is right now? 30 seconds only.
Well, famously, Theresa May said that we don't have money tree. But the reality is that the government sort of plants new money tree as and when required for their purpose. But when it's sort of, for the National Health Service, for the improvement of the education sector, where students don't have to pay fees for their university degrees.
Thank you.
There is no money available.
I thank you for that, Shabir Rizvi. I do apologize for jumping in. Political and economic analyst there from London. Thank you, Shabir. Also, journalist and commentator James Sweedy from Plymouth, UK. Thank you so much. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For me, Kawitawe and the team, it's goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion, we have very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Nur Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh, and welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, Shaykh Nur Muhammad, for today's discussion, we want to get into another interesting question and topic, and that is the quality life in the other worlds or in the hereafter. You know, so many people, when we talk about the life or the quality of life in the other world, they think it is the continuation of the life as we have as ordinary people in this world. But according to Islamic teachings and according to Islamic beliefs, how can we picture the life in the other world?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Very valid question, but maybe to some extent some complicated one, because still we did not experience death and the life in hereafter. But we can, according to some of the verses of Noble Quran, we can have some kind of understanding of the life in hereafter, or you may call it Yawm al-Qiyamah, Resurrection Day, or, for example, Yawm al-Hasra, the Day of Regrets, and yes, some other names of the Day of Judgment. But very briefly speaking, you know that the idea of the Resurrection Day or the Yawm al-Qiyamah is very important in the verse of Noble Quran. The reason of that, because we have plenty of verses of Noble